Welcome in. It is it's fantastic to have you with us for today's deep dive.
Yeah, really glad to be here.
I want you to check your calendar for a second because the date is March 5, 2026. And, you know, according to the intelligence we're unpacking today, the very concept of desktop gaming.
Right, the old standard.
Exactly, the ultimate standard. It's actively collapsing in real time.
It really is.
And we have a seriously compelling piece of source material guiding us through this shift. It's a highly detailed 18-minute read from the tech publication Tekken. It's titled The Handheld Wars 2026, Steam Deck OLED versus ROG Ally 2 versus Nintendo Switch 2.
And I have to say, it genuinely is a landmark piece of technical journalism.
Oh, for sure.
Because Tekken didn't just run a few, you know, standard benchmarks. They put these three distinct hardware philosophies under a microscope. They're trying to figure out how the fundamental rules of silicon have basically been rewritten over the last couple of years.
Which brings us to the mission for our deep dive today. We want to explore this wild new reality. I mean, you are looking at handheld devices packing the rendering power of a $1,200 mid-range PC.
Which is insane.
It is. And they are doing it while drawing less than 30 watts of power.
Yeah.
The war is no longer about who can cram the most processing cores onto a giant motherboard. Instead, it has morphed into this microscopic, hyper-competitive battle over Linux compilers.
Neural image reconstruction.
Right, and aggressive battery management. Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because taking 100 watts of potential energy and shoving it into a 600-gram chassis without literally melting the user's hands.
It seems impossible.
It seems like the ultimate engineering hurdle. How is the industry even surviving that thermal reality?
Well, it requires completely abandoning traditional desktop logic. I mean, wow. You simply cannot ignore the laws of physics regarding the thermal design power.
The TDP limit.
Exactly, the TDP. When you build a desktop tower, you have the luxury of massive airflow. You've got enormous copper heat sinks and endless electricity from a wall outlet.
Right, you just plug it in and forget about it.
But on a handheld, you are fighting a brutal two-front war. You need to generate enough raw processing power to run graphically punishing games.
While keeping it cool.
While simultaneously dissipating the resulting heat fast enough that the plastic shell actually remains comfortable to grip.
Yeah, nobody wants a space heater in their hands.
Right. And the manufacturers we're analyzing today, they've taken radically different, almost ideologically opposed approaches to surviving that thermal battleground.
I was looking at the Tekken piece, and the sheer audacity of ASUS going with the brute force approach is frankly mind-blowing.
It's aggressive.
Very. They armed the ROG Ally 2 with the AMD Z2 Extreme APU, and looking at the spec sheet, it reads like a desktop replacement rather than something you just, you know, toss in a backpack.
Oh, absolutely.
We are looking at Zen 5 architecture for compute, RDNA 3.5 for graphics, 12 physical processing cores, and 24 threads.
It's a monster.
Tekken notes that when you plug the Ally 2 into a wall and unlock its 35-watt turbo mode, it outputs 8.5 teraflops.
Yeah.
That is essentially holding the power of a PlayStation 4 Pro in the palm of your hand.
Right.
But how does that kind of brute force actually translate when you unplug it from the wall?
It translates incredibly poorly if you expect to play for more than an hour.
Oh.
On paper, 8.5 teraflops sounds like an undisputed victory. However, there is a massive architectural catch regarding the fundamental design of a 0.66 processors.
Okay, break that down for us.
That architecture scales beautifully for high-end desktops, but its efficiency absolutely plummets at low frequencies.
So it needs juice to run well.
Exactly. When you unplug that Ally 2, the system attempts to restrict the Z2 Extreme chip to under 10 watts to save the battery, and that raw power comes at a steep cost. The frame timing gets erratic, the efficiency just falls off a cliff,
right.
And you realize that a massive chip starved of wattage is actually a liability, not an asset.
So if brute force drains the battery and tanks efficiency at lower wattages, what is the alternative? Is anyone actually trying to optimize the silicon rather than just making it bigger?
Yes.
That brings us to what Valve is doing with the Steam Deck OLED. They pivoted entirely away from raw power.
Completely different philosophy.
Right. They use a custom chip called Sephiroth, built on a TSMC 6-nanometer node. Technically, it is an older, quote-unquote, weaker chip using Zen 2 and RDNA 2 architecture. But clearly, the raw numbers don't tell the whole story here.
What's fascinating here is how Valve approached the silicon entirely from a perspective of bespoke efficiency.
Bespoke. I like that.
Their engineering genius lies in the cache design and the unified memory bandwidth.
Yeah.
They refused to build a chip that could do everything. They built a chip that does exactly one thing flawlessly.
Which is running PC games at low power.
Exactly. In those incredibly low-power envelopes, right in that crucial sweet spot between 5 and 15 watts, the Sking Deck is vastly more efficient than the Ally 2.
Because it's tailored for it.
That Sephiroth APU was reverse-engineered exclusively to seat its exact 800p display. Not a single transistor or microwatt of power is wasted on rendering a pixel beyond what that specific screen requires.
It is the difference between a custom-tailored suit and an oversized jacket.
Perfect analogy.
And sitting on the sidelines of this raw processing fight is the ultimate wild card, Nintendo.
Yes, the Switch 2.
The Switch 2 uses the NVIDIA Tegra T239, which is a hybrid Ampere and Lovelace architecture. It looks like Nintendo observed the raw GPU race happening between ASUS and Valve and just completely walked away from it.
They realized that chasing mathematical rendering on a mobile battery is a zero-sum game.
Right.
The Switch 2 natively renders games at just 720p, which sounds archaic in 2026.
It really does.
But because Nintendo utilized a dedicated silicon block for tensor calculations built directly into the mobile chip, it relies on deep learning neural networks to reconstruct the rest of the image.
So it's not actually rendering 4K.
No, the hardware doesn't mathematically compute a dense 4K resolution. It predicts it using artificial intelligence.
Wow.
That circumvents the traditional GPU pipeline entirely, saving an unbelievable amount of power.
That concept of predicting or hallucinating the image is going to be incredibly crucial when we get to the display tech later on.
Absolutely.
But before we get there, we need to dive into the invisible war happening right beneath the surface, the operating systems.
The silent killer of battery life.
Exactly. The Tekken article uses this vivid, almost brutal analogy. They argue that on a 1,000-watt desktop PC, Windows 11 running in the background is a tolerable nuisance.
Right, you don't even notice it.
But on a handheld device desperately trying to survive on a 50-watt-hour battery, Windows 11 acts like a parasitic tumor.
I wouldn't call it purely a software problem. It's a severe mismatch of environments. Windows 11 simply was not built for bare metal handheld gaming.
It's too heavy.
The processing overhead is staggering when your resources are that limited. You have background telemetry constantly pinging Microsoft servers.
Always phoning home.
Always. You have Windows Defender antivirus scans triggering in the background and forced system updates. All of these core OS processes periodically hijack the CPU.
And they inevitably do it right in the middle of a rendering heavy gameplay moment.
Every time. And ASUS attempted to fix this software bloat by throwing hardware at the problem. They utilized faster, incredibly power-hungry memory architectures just to compensate for the operating system's inefficiency.
ASUS built that massive Armory Crate software overlay to try and mask the desktop UI and make it feel like a seamless console. But it is just putting a fresh coat of paint on a tractor.
It doesn't fix the underlying engine.
They ultimately can't force Microsoft to release a dedicated, stripped-down, bare-metal handheld edition of Windows. You are still navigating a desktop OS on a device meant for your pocket.
Which is incredibly clunky.
Contrast that directly with Valve's SteamOS, which is built entirely on Arch Linux. Here's where it gets really interesting. Because Valve effectively bypassed the Windows ecosystem entirely using their Proton translation layer.
Proton is arguably the most vital software achievement of this hardware generation.
Big statement.
But it's true. Historically, translation layers were performance killers. But most major PC games are built heavily on Windows DirectX API calls.
Right.
Proton intercepts those Windows commands and converts them into Linux Vulkan commands in real time. But the brilliant part isn't just the translation, it's how Valve handles the rendering pipeline.
Oh, so.
On a standard Windows PC, your processor is forced to compile shaders on the fly while you play. That real-time compilation is the primary culprit behind the severe stuttering you see in massive open-world games.
Which is the most frustrating thing in the world when you are in the middle of a brutal boss fight in Elden Ring, and your frame rate suddenly locks up because the game encountered a new visual effect.
Precisely why Valve's solution is so elegant. They utilize their global server infrastructure to pre-compile all of those complex shader pipelines for every single game.
Ahead of time.
They then deliver those compiled shaders directly to your Steam Deck as tiny micro-updates before you ever hit the play button.
That is so smart.
I want you to imagine the silky, unified feeling of gaming when your hardware and your software are in 100% synchronicity. You aren't compiling shaders mid-fight. Your APU is solely focused on running the game.
It just works.
It strongly reinforces a point made in the source. Boasting about 30 teraflops of raw capability is entirely useless if the game is constantly stuttering under the weight of a bloated Windows environment.
It really highlights the difference between unrefined power and software finesse. Speaking of the final visual output, the display is the single interface where your eyes actually judge the success of all those microscopic transistors.
It's what you're staring at the whole time.
The Steam Deck OLED features a panel fabricated by Samsung Display. Tekken highlights it as one of the most clinically precise 10-bit touch panels available. It pushes 1,000 nits of peak HDR brightness and covers 110% of the DCI P3 color gamut.
It's gorgeous.
But the real story isn't just the color pop, it's the power efficiency.
The visual fidelity is stunning, but we have to look at the battery-saving implications of that technology. Because it's an OLED panel, the battery savings in dark environments are immense.
How does that work?
If you are exploring a pitch-black cyberpunk alleyway or navigating deep space, all those true black pixels are entirely powered off.
They aren't just displaying black, they are off.
You draw zero wattage. It is a brilliant intersection where maximizing visual contrast directly extends the lifespan of the device.
Meanwhile, ASUS stuck to an LTPS IPS panel for the Ally 2. You lose those perfect battery-saving blacks, but they aggressively compensated with speed.
They went for refresh rates.
Right. The Ally 2 sports 165Hz refresh rate paired with VRR. The source digs into why this is mandatory for their design. Handhelds running heavy AAA games rarely maintain a perfect locked 60 frames per second.
Almost never.
The frame rate naturally bounces around between 40 and 55. VRR seamlessly masks those frame drops, tricking the human eye into thinking a struggling device is performing perfectly smoothly.
It's an indispensable feature when your strategy relies on pushing high-fidelity graphical settings.
Yeah.
What's notable is that the Nintendo Switch 2 completely lacks VRR. And while the Steam Deck OLED also lacks a native hardware VRR panel, Valve largely engineered their way out of that problem using hidden algorithmic controls over frame pacing.
Software magic again.
They manipulate the software to keep the image feeling smooth even when the raw frame rate inevitably dips.
Which brings us back to the overarching, terrifying challenge of all mobile hardware, keeping the lights on and the heat down.
The two biggest hurdles.
To correct the notoriously poor battery life of their first iteration, ASUS managed to cram a massive 80-watt-hour LiPo cell into the Ally 2. That is the capacity you would normally expect in a high-end laptop.
It's huge.
To pull that off, they used compressed cellular electrolyte technology. It allowed them to double the battery capacity while only increasing the physical footprint by 20%, effectively giving users upwards of 3 hours of heavy offline play.
But pairing an 80-watt-hour battery with a processor radiating 35 watts of heat creates an immediate thermal crisis.
Oh, I bet.
Traditional copper heat pipes face thermal saturation almost instantly in that chassis. The moment that happens, the processor severely throttles its clock speeds to avoid physical damage.
So your game turns into a slideshow.
Exactly. To combat this, ASUS and Lenovo integrated 3D vapor chamber cooling dynamics.
That sounds intense.
Instead of relying on solid pipes, they use hollow, liquid-filled chambers. As the die heats up, the liquid vaporizes, moves to the cooler areas, condenses, and wicks back. It distributes the heat isotropically.
Meaning evenly in all directions.
Right, across the entire motherboard.
Using the entire interior of the device as an active heat sink. That is wild.
That's a tremendous feat of engineering. By spreading the heat so uniformly, they can utilize smaller fans spinning at much lower RPMs.
Oh, it's quieter, too.
It cools an incredibly hot die without sounding like a turbine. And it successfully staves off that dreaded thermal throttling.
It is brilliant, but even with vapor chambers and compressed electrolytes, the Tepican source is very clear that we are slamming into a physical wall.
We are.
Pocket-sized cooling solutions simply cannot natively process modern games built with dense 4K textures and advanced ray-traced lighting. Mathematical load is too heavy.
Native rendering on mobile is effectively dead.
Dead.
AI image reconstruction is the only viable path forward. It is the paradigm shift defining this hardware generation.
And this is exactly where Nintendo's strategy with the Switch 2 proves to be incredibly forward-thinking.
Definitely.
They are wielding what Tekken outright calls a weapon of mass destruction with NVIDIA's DLSS 4.0 architecture. We noted earlier that the Switch 2's raw silicon looks underpowered on a spreadsheet, but that metric is irrelevant because NVIDIA baked those dedicated tensor cores directly into the silicon.
So the game engine might internally render the world at a vastly lower resolution, like 540p, to keep the power draw incredibly low.
Very low.
But those tensor cores instantly reconstruct it into a crisp 1080p output.
Exactly. But it goes further than just upscaling the resolution. DLSS 4.0 utilizes frame generation to synthesize entirely new frames in between the natively rendered ones,
filling the gaps.
It artificially smooths out the gameplay. Because this AI process uses dedicated, hyper-efficient silicon rather than the main processor, it requires a fraction of the energy.
Which is incredible.
It makes Nintendo's battery life functionally untouchable by any traditional rendering method.
It's leveraging AI to cheat the laws of thermodynamics.
It really is. Now, contrast that with the AMD FSR 3.1 software system, which Asus, Lenovo, and Valve are currently utilizing.
Right.
Because those devices don't have dedicated NVIDIA Tensor cores, they are forced to rely heavily on software-level interpolation.
Which creates a severe bottleneck.
How severe?
Unlike DLSS, which executes on an isolated silicon block, the AMD FSR system has to be processed by the primary compute cores of the APU.
Oh, so it's stealing resources.
This forces the system to cannibalize its own memory bandwidth just to run the upscaling algorithm. Furthermore, it introduces compounded input lag.
And nobody wants that.
The millisecond delay between pressing a button and the action executing on screen actively increases. As Keegan points out, if you were playing a competitive shooter where a 20 millisecond delay gets you killed, that input lag is absolutely fatal to the experience.
Nobody wants their controller feeling sluggish in the middle of a fast-paced firefight.
Not at all.
Now, zooming out from the microscopic level of the silicon, this handheld boom is driving massive global market implications.
It really is shifting things globally.
Tekken details an explosive adoption rate in emerging markets, specifically highlighting regions like the Middle East and North Africa, or MENA.
Right.
In areas prone to frequent power grid fluctuations or where the culture is highly mobile, chaining yourself to a giant desktop tower plugged into a wall is rapidly becoming an obsolete concept.
If we connect this to the bigger picture,
yeah,
you begin to see why the Steam Deck OLED holds a massive tactical advantage in those specific logistics networks.
How so?
It all loops back to that open source Linux architecture. When you own a Steam Deck, you possess the unmitigated freedom to install third-party software ecosystems.
Outside of Steam.
The source explicitly mentions the Heroic Games Launcher, which allows users to easily bypass the aggressive, always-online DRM checks that are heavily baked into traditional Windows setups.
The implication there is huge. If your local power grid goes down, or you don't have a reliable internet connection on a commute, the Asus ROG Ally 2 effectively becomes an expensive paperweight because of its heavy reliance on Windows and Xbox telemetry pipelines that demand persistent online verification.
You literally can't play your games.
The Steam Deck just lets you launch your library offline, entirely uninterrupted.
It's true ownership.
But there is an even larger, slightly more alarming global implication buried in the source, tying directly back to the foundries actually printing these chips.
You're referring to the foundational silicon supply chains.
Yes.
Nintendo operates on a scale that dwarfed the rest of the industry. Their gargantuan production order for those T239 Tegra chips has critically constrained the overall capacity of TSMC's 5-nanometer and 6-nanometer nodes.
The biggest factory in the world.
TSMC is the primary foundry, manufacturing the physical silicon for virtually the entire global tech sector.
Hmm.
You can't just spin up a new 5-nanometer fabrication plant overnight. It takes billions of dollars and years of lead time.
So because Nintendo ordered tens of millions of chips to meet the Switch 2 demand, there is a literal physical squeeze on silicon density globally.
Yes.
Mobile consumer entertainment is no longer operating in a vacuum. It is now competing directly with other vital global industries for wafer allocation.
That is the reality. The exact same highly constrained manufacturing lines that are printing chips so a consumer can play a game at 1080p on a subway are also desperately needed by the intelligent automotive sector and edge AI industrial networks.
They all need the same silicon.
The global supply of wafers is finite, and the demand is pulling from vastly different sectors of society.
Which leads us perfectly to the official engineering verdict from the Tekken Deep Dive. After tearing all these distinct philosophies apart, their conclusion for the landscape in 2026 is pretty stark.
It is.
They state that purchasing a raw, Windows-based handheld like the Ally 2 is an engineering trap. You were paying a premium for the monstrous 35-watt Z2 Extreme processor, but you end up crippled by OS bloat and rapid battery drain. The true portability of the device is heavily compromised.
Conversely, they declare the Steam Deck OLED the undisputed king for anyone requiring a truly unfiltered offline ecosystem.
Right.
The brilliance of its Linux architecture and custom compiler networks makes it perfectly suited for global markets dealing with fluctuating internet access and restrictive DRM.
But when looking at the pure technological trajectory, Tekin concedes that the future undoubtedly belongs to NVIDIA's silicon. The Switch 2 proves that reconstructing pixels via neural AI is forever going to be brutally more efficient than attempting to render them mathematically through traditional transistor logic.
It's the only way forward.
So what does this all mean? We've transitioned from the raw, inefficient power of x86 processors to the quiet, bespoke efficiency of custom Linux, right down to relying on AI to literally predict our entertainment.
It has been a phenomenal evolution to analyze, but this raises an important question for you to mull over. We discussed the TSMC wafer shortage directly caused by Nintendo's staggering manufacturing orders.
Yeah.
If your next handheld console requires the exact same highly constrained 5-nanometer silicon that a growing city desperately needs for its autonomous ambulances or its next-generation smart power grids,
oh, wow.
Who actually gets priority?
Yeah.
At what point does the global pursuit of perfect AI-reconstructed entertainment directly collide with the hardware demands of essential human infrastructure?
That is a brilliant and genuinely provocative thought to leave off on. We want to thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. Keep questioning how the complex technology in your hands connects to the broader logistics of the world around you. Stay curious and keep learning. We will catch you on the next one.